This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. Two more people were killed as thousands of pro-democracy demonstrators took to the streets again Tuesday in Myanmar's largest city, Yangon, and several other towns to oppose military rule of the country since February's first coup. Myanmar security forces have since killed more than 500 civilians, according to the Assistance Association for Political Prisoners. Three of the country's armed ethnic rebel groups, meanwhile, made a joint statement Tuesday threatening the junta with retaliation if it does not stop killing protesters. The U.S. State Department has ordered the departure of non-essential diplomats from Myanmar amid the crackdown on protesters since the country's military coup began. Daily rallies across Myanmar by unarmed demonstrators demanding the restoration of the elected government and the release of civilian leader Aung San Suu Kyi have been met with tear gas, rubber bullets, and even live rounds. A State Department spokesperson said the order departure status will be reviewed in 30-day increments. The U.S., Britain, and the EU have all imposed sanctions in response to the coup and crackdown, but so far, diplomatic pressure has not persuaded the generals to ease off. More actions have been announced by the White House in response to criticism that President Joe Biden is not sufficiently responding to a surge in hate incidents against Asian Americans. Among the announcements Tuesday, a White House initiative on Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders is being reinstated and expanded. It was initially established during the administration of President Bill Clinton. The White House is also allocating $50 million for the AAPI Survivors of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault for Multi-Agency Initiative. Via remote, this is VOA News. Honduran President Juan Orlando Hernandez's brother was sentenced to life in prison by a New York judge Tuesday for large-scale drug trafficking after a trial that implicated the leader of the Central American country. Tony Hernandez was found guilty in October of 2019 on four counts, including conspiring to import cocaine into the United States and possessing machine guns and making false statements. During the trial, U.S. prosecutors said President Hernandez had been a co-conspirator in his brother's crimes, although he has not been formally charged by the U.S. justice system. President Hernandez has repeatedly denied all allegations of drug trafficking. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris and Guatemalan President Alejandro Yamatei spoke by phone on Tuesday and agreed to work together to address the root causes of migration to the United States, according to a White House statement. They agreed to explore innovative opportunities to create jobs and to improve the conditions for all people in Guatemala and the region, including by promoting transparency and combating crime, according to the statement. President Joe Biden named Harris as U.S. efforts with Mexico and Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador to try to stem the flow of migration, which has climbed sharply in recent weeks. Harris also accepted an invitation by Yamatei to visit the Central American country at a future date. Officials said Tuesday the backlog of ships trying to pass through the Suez Canal could take about 4 days to work through now that the container ship stuck there for nearly a week has been sent on its way. Meanwhile, the Ever Given, one of the world's largest container ships, was undergoing inspections for any damage as investigators try to figure out why it ran aground before being dislodged on Monday. Tanzanian police said Tuesday that 45 people were killed in a stampede last week at a public viewing of the body of the late President John Magufuli. The fatalities were much higher than the five originally reported. The March 21st stampede was triggered when a wall collapsed after some people climbed it to view Magufuli's body at a stadium outside Dar es Salaam, according to the city's police chief. The government said Magufuli died of heart failure, although opposition leaders maintain he died of complications from COVID-19. For more news, please join us at voanews.com or the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown reporting by remote, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Thousands of survivors of an attack on the Mozambican town of Palma are fleeing.
Our staff on the ground have been told that many of those evacuated saw their family members being killed, that they hid in the forest for days to evade the armed men who attacked their communities. Others, of course, do not know where their family members are.
Who's killing Ugandan taxi and truck drivers? Cameroon hopes for peace in neighboring Central African Republic as that country inaugurates its president. Tanzania will swear in a new vice president today, Wednesday. Liberia's second female senator in this legislative session has been certificated. And there's an oxygen tanks crisis in Kenya.
We have got about 20,000 oxygen cylinders that are out there in people's homes, and we are appealing to anybody who is hoarding oxygen cylinders to immediately return them.
And COVID-19 pandemic has a big effect in Eswatini, formerly Swaziland. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. UN aid agencies say thousands of survivors of the horrific armed attack in the Mozambican town of Palma have arrived in Pemba, and many more are expected. As Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, the agencies say they are providing both material and psychological assistance to the many people who arrived deeply traumatized with nothing more than the clothes on their backs.
The International Organization for Migration reports more than 3,360 people have arrived in Pemba and other districts in Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province. IOM spokesman Paul Dillon says they've been arriving by foot, bus, plane, and boat. He says many have fled with nothing but the clothes they are wearing.
Our staff on the ground have been told that many of those evacuated saw their family members being killed, that they hid in the forest for days to evade the armed men who attacked their communities. Others, of course, do not know where their family members are. They reported also that many homes were destroyed.
Dozens of civilians reportedly have been killed by Islamist militants who attacked Palma on March 24th. Aid agencies report the situation there remains very volatile. Communications have been cut, so information is hard to get. An insurgency that broke out in Cabo Delgado in October 2017 by Islamist militants to establish an Islamist state has since developed into a humanitarian crisis. It has displaced some 700,000 civilians, half of them children. UN Children's Fund spokeswoman Marixi Mercado is in Pemba. She says UNICEF teams were at Pemba Airport Monday to receive children who had been evacuated from Afungi, a district in Palma.
There were at least seven children on that plane who were completely alone. All the children are disoriented and afraid. Many have spent days hiding in the bush without food and water. There were some terrible scenes. One injured girl, around 5 years old, was carried off the plane, moaning in pain. We can't confirm her age because she was so traumatized, all she could say was her name.
Mercado says Pemba Provincial Hospital is doing its best to care for injured children. Aid agencies are rushing emergency supplies to the area. The World Health Organization reports it has enough medical supplies in the province to support the population for now. The World Food Program is providing emergency food aid and is pre-positioning thousands of response ration kits in the southern parts of Mozambique's Palma district. The UN Humanitarian Air Service, which is run by WFP, is providing an air bridge to transport critical supplies and staff and to evacuate civilians from Palma. Other UN and private agencies also are contributing essential material relief, as well as protection and crucial psychosocial counseling to help the many victims of this brutal attack deal with their ongoing distress. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
As the Central African Republic inaugurates President Faustin-Archange Touadéra for a second time yesterday, Tuesday, neighboring Cameroon is hoping for a return to stability. Cameroon authorities say those displaced across the border from recent fighting have been returning home. But in a speech Monday night, Cameroon's Prime Minister Joseph Ngute said the threat from Central African Republic rebels is still disrupting trade and security. Moki Edwin Kizeka files this report from Yaoundé after speaking to analysts.
Cameroon Prime Minister Joseph John Ngute says chaos in the Central African Republic has stalled development efforts and peace initiatives in Cameroon. Ngute met Monday night with Faustin-Archange Touadéra before Tuesday's second inauguration of the CAR leader. Ngute says Cameroon President Paul Biya, who sent him to Bangui for the inauguration, has hoped that Touadéra's leadership will bring back peace to the CAR and, by extension, to Cameroon. He says both Cameroon and the CAR can never have peace or develop if there is a crisis in any of the two states. He says the two countries are neighbors that must accept one another's citizens in case there is a crisis. Ngute says Cameroon and the CAR both have a common economic interest in the road linking Cameroon's coastal city of Douala to Bangui, capital of the landlocked CAR. He says the road must be protected to stop any rupture in the supply of goods and services in the two countries. Touadéra officially began a second term in office on January 19 after the CAR's December 27 presidential polls. His victory was confirmed on January 18 by the CAR's Constitutional Court, but was rejected by the opposition. The CAR accused former President François Bozizé of organizing a rebel alliance to overthrow Touadéra, a charge Bozizé denied. Cameroon reported that after the election, hundreds of CAR civilians fled across the border to escape election-related violence. Cameroon said it pushed back hundreds of CAR rebels that crossed the border. Ngute said election violence stopped at least 4,000 trucks from transporting humanitarian assistance and goods to the CAR. He said thousands of containers destined for the CAR were blocked at the Douala seaport and would only be transported if peace returns to the CAR. Roselyne Dembe is a political analyst at the University of Bangui. In spite of the tension, she is optimistic Touadéra can bring back peace to the CAR. She spoke via a messaging app from Bangui. She says Faustin-Archange Touadéra's inauguration after years of fighting and chaos in the CAR indicates there is some level of acceptance of his leadership. She says CAR history has been marked by military coups since David Dacos became the first CAR president in 1960. She says Touadéra is the only CAR leader that has been inaugurated for a second consecutive time after a democratic election. Touadéra secured his position by gathering more than 53% of the vote in the December 27 election that was marred by violence. Jean-Marie Noël Ndina Ngnoa, conflict resolution lecturer at the University of Yaoundé, says Touadéra will succeed because he has the support of the UN and the African Union. He says the CAR leader should continue dialogue for peace to return. He says Touadéra should call for a national conference as part of ongoing negotiations to solve the power crisis in his country. He says if Touadéra opts for the use of force, which is also a legitimate way of protecting civilians, he may still have a very long way to go to bring back the needed peace in the CAR. He says what civilians want now is an urgent return to peace. In the last 7 years of fighting, close to 1 million Central Africans have fled to neighboring Cameroon, Chad, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Nigeria. Last week, Cameroon said some of the displaced persons were returning to the CAR with the hope of finding peace. Moki Edwin Kinzaka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Tanzania will today, Wednesday, swear in Finance Minister Philip Mpango as the country's new vice president, following his nomination by President Samia Suluhu Hassan and Parliament's approval yesterday, Tuesday. Onesmo Olengu Ramia is the national coordinator of the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition. He says Tanzanian civil society organizations hope that Mpango's background in finance, coupled with President Suluhu Hassan's civil society background, would help move Tanzania forward in a progressive way.
Yes, I would certainly say that Dr. Philip Mpango is one of the few people who are much experienced in economic and development here in Tanzania, and he has done a lot, a tremendous job around that particular area, as he served as the a Minister of Finance and Planning for a number of years.
What does his appointment suggest in terms of where the new president is going to be carrying Tanzania?
We believe that because of his exposure, experience in economic issues, we believe that the combination with our current president, Her Excellency Madam Samia, will bring quite progressive development in our country when it comes to economic development, of course, in terms of how do we handle our financial matters as a country and all the related issues that stands as a foundation of development of this country.
The civil society, the press, the media under the late President Magufuli suffered tremendously. In fact, it was said by Amnesty International that President Magufuli weaponized the laws against the press. As a member of the civil society, what would you like for the new president, Samia Suluhu Hassan, to do that would incorporate or bring the civil society on board in Tanzania?
As a civil society, we've issued our joint statement, of course, congratulating our new president and also at the same time sending our condolences message to her, given the untimely death of our late President Joseph Magufuli. We are mourning at the country, but at the same time, we are quite happy that we have Her Excellency, Madam Samia. As a civil society, we are proud to have her, given her background. She has been a civil society servant for quite a number of years before she joined the politics. She is one of the founding members of the Zanzibar NGO Association. She also served several times with other NGOs. This gives us a lot of hopes, and we are quite optimistic that this is the time now the civil society sector is going to be valued, and our development, our meaningful developmental contribution to this nation is going to be taken into consideration. Of course, for a number of years, and especially for the last few years, this sector has suffered a lot in terms of our independence, of course, in terms of our operations. To the extent some of us suffered a lot of challenges, including some of our accounts being frozen. So these are the times we believe now we can work together with our new president. We are going to create a space whereby our role to economic development of this country, our role to rule of law, accountability, respect for human rights, gender inequality, and many other things that are related to are going to be well adhered. Even the background of the two senior leaders, of the president and the president in this country for now.
Onesmo Olamgun Ramia is the national coordinator of the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition. You are speaking with us from Dar es Salaam. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 31st. At least 20,000 oxygen cylinders in Kenya are at people's homes and institutions as that country struggles to address oxygen shortage amid rising COVID-19 cases. The health ministry has appealed to individuals and hospitals to return their empty oxygen cylinders so that companies can supply needed oxygen to hospitals. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, steel manufacturing company DevKey is giving away free oxygen to hospitals in Kenya in exchange for the empty cylinders.
Kenyans and institutions having medical oxygen cylinders at home and in different hospitals have been asked to return them for oxygen supply in the country. Kenya's Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe said that at least 20,000 oxygen cylinders are missing and that individuals holding them should return them so that the government can address the oxygen shortage in the country.
We have got about 20,000 oxygen cylinders that are out there in people's homes, that are in hospitals and other institutions. Now, these cylinders are required back to the industry immediately, and we are appealing to anybody who is holding oxygen cylinders to immediately return them so that the companies can be able to use them to supply oxygen to our hospitals.
Just a day after the government asked for return of cylinders, steel manufacturer DevKey Company in Kenya has asked private and public hospitals countrywide to collect oxygen at their company in exchange for cylinders. This move came in shortly after the health ministry's announcement that the government is grappling with oxygen shortage in the country that is required in fight against COVID-19. Kagwe says Kenya requires those cylinders like never before, given that the cylinders are now on demand in the international market.
And these cylinders are expensive. The international market is obviously very squeezed now. The supply is a problem. This cylinder is cost about 40,000 shillings. So we are requesting and we are asking for assistance, even from the government, GAO, to at least identify. And by the way, it is an offense to keep the cylinders when we have asked for them under the Public Health Act. But please return these cylinders. They are a matter of life and death.
Infectious disease specialist at the Ministry of Health, Dr. Samuel Njenga, said that even before COVID-19 outbreak, there have been some Kenyans with lung chronic diseases that have been using oxygen at home. Njenga says government hospitals do not give oxygen equipment to patients.
In our public hospitals, the arrangement is usually to have the patient's family organizing to be able to get what is called an oxygen concentrator, not actually getting cylinders from the hospital. Some of the oxygen concentrators may also be accompanied by cylinders. For those that can afford, they procure an oxygen concentrator and can now go home and continue to use the oxygen from that concentrator. Basically, that is the main group of COVID patients who end up using oxygen at home.
Kenya is currently in a crisis and unable to contain the surge of COVID-19 numbers as both public and private hospitals are full of COVID-19 patients. The health ministry is not, however, clear on those in possession of oxygen cylinders, even though local dailies in Kenya had earlier reported that politicians and prominent businessmen had installed ICU beds and other hospital equipment at their private residence with fear that they might lose out on hospital beds in case they contract COVID-19. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
At least 9 Ugandan taxi and truck drivers have been killed in 2 ambushes in South Sudan in the past 2 days. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
5 Ugandan taxi drivers were killed on Sunday while their passengers were forced to strip, then were abandoned. The 4 truck drivers were slain yesterday on the Koboko-Juba Road through Yei in South Sudan's Lanya County. Byron Chinene is the chairperson of the Uganda South Sudan Truck Drivers Association.
This incident started on Sunday when they killed the 5 people, the taxi operators from Koboko and Arua, who are in South Sudan at May. So these people were just ambushed on the way. Yesterday, Monday, when the army came to open the road, again, there was serious fighting the following yesterday. That's when also these truck drivers were intercepted along the way and they were killed.
According to Chinene, only 1 truck driver escaped yesterday's ambush.
That one, lucky enough, he did die, but he's in a serious condition in the hospital.
At least 13 passengers who were traveling in the taxis were rescued and placed under the care of South Sudan's government. Wilson Sanya is the mayor of Uganda's Koboko municipality.
So I went across to South Sudan. I had a meeting with the people across there. What they told me, what I heard and what they told me is that these people entered an ambush of rebels. Ambush of armed people. So I really do not know who these rebels are, but all I know as mayor is that they entered an ambush 65 kilometers from Yei to Juba. And those people on Ile, they were killing the driver. The passengers were stripped naked and allowed to go unhurt.
Sanya has appealed for CAM and says they are coordinating with their South Sudan counterparts in Yei to rescue those who were abducted and also give formal communication on the incident.
What is happening now is really something which all of us, the Ugandan, and are really all perturbed. We're all shocked. We are, I think, going to have a security meeting so that we can have a formal, you know, position about the whole.
Chinene says the drivers want security beefed up along major routes used by traders to South Sudan.
This thing has taken place for many years. People are killed every day in South Sudan. And we don't know why they are targeting mostly Ugandans. We don't know. And we don't know the solution. Because for us, we are proposing that maybe the Uganda army can go back to South Sudan for patrols. Because we are going there to do business. It's not in Akizale. In Sudan, it's just like a home.
The Koboko mayor says some of the bodies are being sent for burial in Uganda, but others are still in the bush as serious fighting continues. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
At long last, Liberia's Elections Commission on Tuesday confirmed and certificated the election of independent candidate Boto Kane of Bapolu County as the second female senator in the current legislative session of Liberia. Rita Jlogbe reports from Monrovia.
After weeks of legal wrangling following the December midterm senatorial election, Kane emerged victorious from the Supreme Court last week. The court ordered the Board of Commissioners of the National Elections Commission to announce the results of the special senatorial election held in Gbapolu. For Kane, the long and hard-fought battle was worth it. She says her victory is a huge achievement for women of Liberia. Madam Kane called on Liberian women not to fear going into politics in Liberia. She says her ascendancy to the Senate should serve as motivation for those having desires of contesting elected offices. Kane's victory has energized the Liberian women amid prolonged debate and push for more representation in the national legislature. Madam Magdela Kopo, former presidential and Montserrat County senatorial candidate and political leader of the Movement for One Liberia, has been leading the charge in recent months for women representation. She says the women of Liberia are aiming for equal participation as their male counterparts.
We're here today. We've witnessed the certification of our senator, and this is just the beginning of the process. There's still a lot more work to do.
Meanwhile, the chairperson of the Elections Commission, Madam Devi Eto Brown Lasana, says the commission is a credible institution and did its best to protect the integrity of the election process.
Let me remind all of us that election is everybody's business, and it is therefore binding on all Liberians to ensure a peaceful elections at all times, including senators elect. All Liberians must commit themselves, including the National Elections Commission, to the rule of law as the surest way to sustaining our peace and democracy in Liberia.
With the certification of Boto Kane, Liberia now has two female senators, including Senator Nyombli Kanga Lawrence of Grand Bassa County. Rita Jobber, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
And that's it for this Wednesday, March 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello. I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up on the program, crisis at the U.S. southern border. We'll talk with an expert on Central America and a U.S. immigration expert about President Biden's two-pronged approach to stemming the flow of migrants from the Northern Triangle countries. Encounter next Saturday and Sunday on the Voice of America.